is this they invaded Aboriginal land?
The land belongs to us. We belong to the land.
They don't do these things. They talk about it, but they never do it.
Government is trying to take away from us.
Let's Talk, Triple A's flagship program that continues to elevate the diverse voices of First Nations people across the country. Centered around the unceded sovereignty of First Nations people in this country, honouring the history with a solutions-based focus on the future. With your host, Pomeroy journalist, Danny Tierce Johnson.
Yama, yama, yama. Good morning. Hello and welcome to Let's Talk. I'm Danny Tease Johnson, Gomeroi journalist. I'd like to start the show by acknowledging country. I start by acknowledging the traditional owners from the lands that we broadcast from. And I'd like to pay my respects to the elders past and present. And I extend that all across this beautiful black nation today, wherever you are listening, to your elders past and present. Today on Let's Talk, we are talking to Michaela Reynolds. Her brother Nathan, at the tender age of just 36, died of an asthma attack in a New South Wales correctional centre back in 2018. A coroner has found the inadequate response of staff deprived him of some chance of survival. His sister said his death was preventable and vowed to never stop fighting for justice, and she joins me on the line today. Hello, Michaela. Can you tell us your mob and your country, please, sis?
Yeah, I'm a proud Kamilaroi woman living on the Eora Nation.
Well, welcome to the show. I'm actually heading out to Gomeroi country, Kamilaroi country today, sis. Yeah, I'm up in Meanjin, so I'm looking forward to getting back out in country. Hey, sis, first of all, as I read out in introduction there, you're the brother of Nathan Reynolds, who sadly and tragically passed away in custody. First of all, sis, how are you and how are your family? I mean, the Easter break is a time for a lot of us family mob to come together and share each other's company, and I guess these holidays might serve as a reminder for you, mob, eh?
Yeah, whenever Christmas and Easter and birthdays, I feel as if that's the time where you're often reminded that their presence is no longer around because they're the person missing in the room and you are all together with your family.
Yeah, it's a big time of reflection. Yeah. So, yeah, I can't imagine how you feel.
Yeah, so we definitely miss him, and there's always a person missing, and that unfortunately is Nathan.
Yeah, it must be heartbreaking, especially, you know, for passed away in such harrowing circumstances. Can you tell us what your brother was like, sis, as a person? I mean, a lot of the audience out there might not be aware of this case or might not have a great insight into your brother. When I look at the pictures of him, when you Google the brother online there, one thing I noticed about him is he's got really kind eyes. That's the first thing I see when I look at a picture of him. Can you tell us about him, sis?
Yeah, so Nathan was the oldest sibling out of all of us. And he really acted like the oldest one too. He had a heart of gold. I didn't have my dad around me growing up, and I'd spend most of my school holidays at Nathan's. He treated me like a daughter of his, not like a sister. Nathan was the type of person who would give the last dollar out of his pocket to help someone in need, even if that meant that him going without. He was the father of a daughter and two stepchildren who, they were his world and he loved them dearly. We're so lucky to have his daughter and have Nathan live through her because we are often reminded of Nathan when we are in the presence of her, and it still makes us feel like we have Nathan around in some way when we are around his daughter.
Yeah, I guess, it's beautiful to have the daughter there, but yeah, it hits me hard when I hear about our brothers and sisters inside and tragically pass away, and then they've got their own kids and their own families. It's another level of sadness. And
yeah, and I remember there was an inmate getting out at the same time as Nathan, and he told me, we're both counting down together, and Nathan actually had a little, you could see how excited he was to get back out. All he spoke about was going back home to his kids, and that was his main thing. And he had when he used to talk about it, he said, I could almost see tears in Nathan's eyes, but how excited he was to get out.
How far was he off from getting out before?
He was serving a 4-month sentence and he had 2 weeks left. And the last time we seen Nathan was 2 weeks before his passing at the funeral of my mum's partner. He got day release.
Yep.
And he said, I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. And he was so excited.
Oh, sorry, sis. It's just, yeah, it's hard to deal with this. You know, like, I haven't, you know, I said to you earlier when we were having a yarn sort of before the interview that when this first went down, I was at NITV and I was one of the journalists working on the stories along with, I think it was Nakari Thorpe at the time back in the day. But, yeah, it's just tragic circumstances. Can you tell the audience and me, because 4 months, right, it's not a long time, and obviously, you know, I know how the prison system works for our mob. You know, there's a lot of little offences that get added up and then they get put behind bars. Yeah. It's happened to my own family. I was telling you before, sis, that, you know, my own brother and sister are inside and, you know, we're dealing with that constantly. Yeah, I just don't know how you deal with it all.
Yeah, so I remember Nathan was serving parole, and because he worked, Nathan was a hard worker. Yep. Ever since he was 16, he was a drip rocker. He was a provider for his family. Nathan worked every Saturday.
Hard working tradie.
Monday to Friday, the only time he didn't work was obviously when he was in custody. And I remember he got out on parole and he said, I can't do this. He said, it's too hard for me. He said, it's easier to go back into jail and serve the remaining of my sentence. He said, I'm out. And he said, I got to go to community service, which takes up another working day, and he had to go do another program on a Sunday. So he did not have one day free from Monday to Sunday.
Jeez. So he just wanted to serve his sentence, get it over and done with, get back to providing as a hard-working tradie.
Yeah. He loved his work.
Sis, can you tell, what do you get sent for?
He got sent for a breach of a court order. God.
It's just unbelievable, this pattern of our mob getting locked up. We've seen it with Miss Dew with the fines. We see that in New South Wales, you know, the way our mob are treated. It's just unbelievable that he's even ended up inside.
Exactly.
You know, and for you as a family, I mean, you've been fighting this for, you know, nearly 4 or 5 years now. How is it going through the coronial inquests and have to constantly go through this fight? Can you give our audience an insight of what that's like? Because I've sat in there as a journalist, but that's nothing compared to what it is sitting there as a family member.
So you have a funeral that happens after everyone's passing, and that's generally the time where you can say goodbye and you can heal and take time to grieve. When you go through a coronial process, you don't have time to grieve, or you can't. You're still carrying the burden of the unknown on your back. So we had to carry that on our backs for 3 years, two years before a coronial inquest. And it was only this year was the first year we could actually heal as a family and hope that Nathan is resting in peace, because that process is so hard to go through. The most heartbreaking thing is watching your mum and the grandparents in a courtroom hearing of these tragic things, and it's so traumatic. Nathan's coronial inquest was for 7 days all up, and we had to hear and see things that we weren't expecting to hear. Yeah. And when you see people potentially... when you have to face people that potentially did not care enough to keep someone you love alive, it's really tough looking at them and hearing their petty stories that they have to say.
It's meaningless,
and it's
isn't
hard
it?
Yeah.
I've sat through a coronial inquest, and the thing that bugs me out is there's no education around what they are for mob leading into it. They might get the lawyer say this is this, and I remember just how shocked I was as a journo sitting in these Black Desk in Cassidy coronial inquest, because mob think they got a bit of hope with these things. But it's just another empty process where recommendations get made, and just like the Royal Commission into Death in Cassidy, none of them get taken up, and the mob are left feeling hopeless and depressed and deflated whilst grieving for their loved one. And we've seen this with the Cumin J. Walker case, this with, you know, the way poor Samara and Uncle Ned Hargraves had to sort of sit out the front of the court after the verdict was handed down. So it just must be so hard for you to keep going. And how do you just keep going as a family?
I think... we keep going for the sake of Nathan and getting his justice. Although he wasn't here with us, I feel as if his spirit was still around us, and he gave us strength that we needed to get through.
Yeah, no, that's I certainly feel that. I mean, how did it feel last week when you had the anniversary of the Black Death in Cassidy on the Friday? Must have been a triggering week. I remember talking I reached out to sort of the Dajua Foundation with April Day and Troy Brady, and I just felt, you feel horrible as a journo chasing people for interviews in this week, because it is the Groundhog Day, and I'm well aware that we're asking you to bring up your trauma and talk about your pain. How was that week for you? Is it quite unsettling, or is it something that galvanises you?
No, it's very triggering, because you turn on the TV, on NITV, and that's the most spoken topic. You go on social media and it's all you see. You read similar stories to what's happened to your own family, and you see comments from family or you see their posts. And we all feel the same thing, and I'm sure a lot of families feel the same way too, that when you read, you know, it's triggering for all people. It's triggering for my family in custody too, that are in custody as well, seeing these things on NITV when they watch TV. It's triggering for my family. It's just really hard week with lots of reminders.
Yeah, no, certainly, you know, thanks for talking about how that is, because I just want people out there to understand that it is so triggering. And I think there's this Groundhog Day attitude that every year on these anniversary dates, you know, we have to get these people, we have to talk about it, we have to do it. But as I said to you the other day, I want to, and April and Troy, I want to keep talking about this all year round, not just on the anniversary dates, because, you know, as we've seen, like there's so many things happen in prison of recent. We're up over 500 deaths in custody now, and it just seems to be endless, you know. So hopefully by talking to you, Mob, and just keeping these issues at the front line for people to think about and to, you know, get out there and talk about it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea, to keep people reminded that these things still keep happening. Nothing's changing. Coronial inquest families are sitting through them. They're going through recommendations. Some recommendations may be being put forward to be looked into, but again, death still keeps happening and nothing is changing.
Yeah, well, lucky we got Mob like you out there. I know you shouldn't be there on the front line, but we are thankful that yous are, and, you know, it's such an inspiration to see what your families do and what yous go through, and how yous keep getting up when the system, you know, tries to keep yous down. So we thank you for that, sis.
Thanks for the great work you do as well, putting the message out and making sure people don't forget the tragedies that our mob face.
No, that's what black media is here for, and that's why we're set up, and that's why AAA Murray Country and this program Let's Talk exists. We stand on the shoulder of giants, and some great ones before us have been repping for 20 years here. So you know, it feels like an honour just to be able to chat to your sis and get this story out to the world. How do you deal with mainstream media coverage? Like, some of it's so disgusting. The way they portray our mob, you know, I saw it firsthand with your brother. You see it with every case. How do you cope with the mainstream media stuff that's put out there? And what's it like when the mainstream journos try and call you and get you for interviews and things like that?
That is a good topic. I don't like how Channel 7 leave our comments on for people to be racist, but if they put up a person not of colour, they will leave their comments open. They won't close their comments, but they'll openly accept racist comments from other people about turning the comments off.
Yep.
I just feel like they don't have much awareness or cultural appropriateness, and I think it's something they should really do some training in, because they can come off quite racist, and I feel like they just want something that, you know, potentially benefits whoever they're working for instead of putting out the message for the right reasons.
Yeah, it's I find it's just completely racist. A lot of the coverage, and we saw that in the Australian, I will call it out nationally. What we saw in the Australian with the coverage, particularly around Coleman J. Walker, Bridget Brennan called it out, the ABC senior journalist, Indigenous Affairs editor there. Thankfully, she called it out. But what she said was she wants all journos to call it out, not just us black ones, not the, you know, the Murrays and the Currys, but she wants all Australian journalists to call this out so you families don't have to put up with this. And I thought that was very brave of her, and something I'd say, like, you know, I'd love to see you mob get a bit of protection around what happens in the media, because I just think people out there don't understand the pain and the emotion that goes with it all.
Yeah, I remember that headline. That was actually disgusting.
Yeah, we got to call it out, sis. You know, it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, you fellas are all hurting.
Yeah, I agree.
So tell us now about some of your work. I just want to change direction. You're currently working at the Aboriginal Legal Service and nearly a lawyer, right? Can you tell us about some of the work that you do and why you got into this?
So I actually have been at Aboriginal Legal Service for 3 years now. My why is my brother Nathan and other mob that have similar are going through similar circumstances as my brother. My job now is I support families throughout a coronial inquest. I've had quite a few jobs in Aboriginal Legal Service, but this is a particular one close to my heart because I can work closely with families and I've been through it. And I think that this service that is now available for people that are going through a coronial inquest is important. Like you said before, when you sit there, families don't know what to expect. They don't know what's happening tomorrow. They don't know what's happening on the day. They've never gone through such a thing. So I think that my job is quite important to be that support person and just to let the families know what to expect and what's coming tomorrow and just be their point of call whenever they're in need. And I also study law. So one day I'll be on the front line helping people more than I can now.
No, I just find it completely unreal. The quote that comes to mind is not all heroes wear capes. And, I certainly feel that with you, Michaela. Like, you've been through so much, you and your family with your brother and what that whole tragedy is, losing your brother in behind bars. And then to be able to come out of that, to stand with the next, unfortunately, the next lot of mob that are going to have to go through this, that you guys are there, yourself and the Dajua Foundation. It's just unbelievable that, we got you guys here on the front line now and, you shouldn't be there. I've said that before, but, I just find it completely inspiring, sis, and it's a real phoenix rises from the ashes sort of a yarn.
Yeah, thank you.
But what is it like being a lawyer or training to be a lawyer? The ALS gets smashed, they're so busy, unfortunately. But I've had a lot to do with them over the years and... they're a pretty incredible organisation, but not much funding.
Yeah, we unfortunately don't get much funding, that's correct. I wish that Aboriginal Legal Services could do more than just represent people in criminal matters or coronial inquest. I wish that there was a civil department to help people fight their fines because some things fall under civil and legal aid sometimes don't have capacity either because of the high volumes of work.
What does that mean if it falls under civil?
So civil is things like wills, things like harassment by police.
Yeah, right.
It could be like something happening in your workplace or even fines, and fines can lead to jail. So if civil action is taken before that, I think that there'll be a lot of people who could potentially not end up in jail or even police brutality and complaints. And while they're so traumatised by police every day, and there's only so much ALS can do. So I wish that we did have more funding so we can help more.
Yeah. I mean, are they still locking people up for fines, are they?
Potentially that can happen.
Yeah.
I don't think that law has changed, but for what ALS do and the funding they get, I think our mob are very lucky to have ALS. And I've worked with some really incredible people that really care and are there for the right reasons out of their heart to help fight the injustices of this country. And they also inspire me and my colleagues I work with.
Yeah, I've had a lot, as a journalist, I've had a lot to do with lawyers and, I had some good ones in here the other day on Let's Talk, but particularly the work of Naaja up there, in the Northern Territory. Yeah, I just swear, I just went, oh, my God, these black lawyers, they're a completely different breed. Because they're there for a different reason.
And I think our mob can also feel that too. If you're in presence of another black person, you can feel the energy and the difference sometimes, I think.
What's it like if you walk into a courtroom there and you got your little black swags with you, it must feel pretty empowering, representing your people and also advocating and hopefully getting people out, it must feel so empowering.
It is, and I think every time you hear of the I know it is. It's very empowering. But what drives me and is like the people, like they really need. We need more black lawyers. I think it's really important.
Yeah, we need a whole army of them. Hey, speaking of lawyering, like so many of us, we have siblings involved in the criminal justice system. You know, I've been pretty open about my family and that sort of yarn. I think it's really important to be honest. But for you guys, you've got another matter at hand. Is it okay if we just have a quick yarn about that?
Yeah, so...
Because I just want people out there to understand, like, it just doesn't end with one thing, sis. It's a continuing cycle for us mob that we have to deal with, and I just want our audience out there to understand that.
Yeah, so another older brother of mine, unfortunately, is in a cycle of incarceration, and he unfortunately often ends up back in custody. He suffers really bad because he gets really bad anxiety and obviously flashbacks and stuff because of the trauma that he's gone through losing Nathan.
Yeah, well.
I remember he was in custody and he was trying to get help after Nathan passed away and he was coughing blood and no one helped him. He didn't get to see a doctor or go to hospital until 2 weeks later. So he had pneumonia and his lungs were full of fluid. So losing a brother and coughing up blood still wasn't enough for my brother to get help.
Oh, God.
So that again goes to show the neglect and the care. That could have been another brother lost.
Yeah. So you guys must be in fear. Like, honestly, you must be like when the young brother gets locked up or whatnot, you must be just thinking, oh, geez, you know?
Yeah, lots of sleepless nights and stress and worry.
Yeah, no, I can't imagine that sort of stress and that anxiety that you and your family face, having been what you've already been through. I'll just switch questions here now. Around the Dajua Foundation, you're involved with that. Can you tell us about some of the, you know, what's it like being involved with that organisation? And obviously they're set up for a pretty harrowing reason, but just amazing work that, you know, April, Troy, Samara, all the families involved do.
That foundation, I think, is so needed. It helps so many people. When you lose someone in custody, you don't expect it to happen. It's a burden. You're going through enough stuff when this happens, dealing with police, dealing with correctives, or, you know, just getting your head around what has happened. And then that foundation steps in and helps in, like, I can't even say the great, like, I can't praise them enough. It's just, why did it take First Nations mob who lost someone in custody to start this foundation? Why hasn't the government ever helped or offered to put something in place to support families through this? I just think that it's just a great foundation and they're doing great things for people. And what I love most about it too is that it's a foundation run by families who have gone through these things. So we all are a support network and we all know what it's like to go through this. And,
No, it's just, understand that the foundation shouldn't exist. But what April's done and Troy Brady and Samara Fernandez-Brown, yourself, I'm just trying to think of the names, but, you know, there's some amazing people involved and just I've just seen firsthand the work they do to support families going through stuff. And I guess it must mean a lot to you personally to have that safety net, that black safety net, because the government ain't going to help us. We know that. Otherwise, this stuff would have been set up a long time ago. But to have this black safety net, it just must feel wonderful, sis, in such a painful time.
Yeah.
But look, Michaela, I just want to thank you for coming on the show today. I know you've got a big, busy day ahead of you. Just thanks for coming on and sharing your story. And I'd like to get you back on whenever anything happens just to keep talking about this and keep the story of your brother's memory and their tragedy in the forefront of all Australians' ears, because they all need to hear the truth of this country and they need to see, you know, what's happening. This is happening in 2018, you know, like it just shouldn't. It's a pointless, pointless passing and, you know, I just can't imagine what people go through. And like, you know, this brother, he wasn't a violent man. He just got sent for 4 months. You know, it wasn't a long sentence. And
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
he didn't come home. And I just feel for you, sis. But I'm also inspired by your bravery and your courage of what you and your whole family does.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep talking.
Thank you.
No, we'll keep talking, sis. The anniversary days aren't the only days that we keep talking about our heavy yarns. We absolutely need to do it. And you can go and jump on the Dajua Foundation page. You can look up what they do. You can find out how to support them. You can donate to them because money goes directly to families who need support. Very, very important work. So thanks again, Michaela. We really appreciate your time here on AAA Murray Country.